Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. One of my favorite compadres in that space is our first guest, Fred Grandy. He joins us for the weekly roundup. He is a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, former member of Congress, and star of stage and screen. And Fred, it's always good to have you with us.
Sure.
Let's talk a little bit about Chuck Hagel. He is, of course, heading to a showdown in the Senate. Another cloture vote is scheduled for Tuesday of next week. The heavy betting is that he'll get through because there have been a number of wandering Republicans in all of this. Fred, I want to ask you, though, as a former member of Congress, whether you would find offensive, as certainly I do as a former Senate staffer, that Chuck Hagel, having promised the chairman of the Oversight Committee, the Senate Armed Services Committee, a Democrat, Carl Levin, that he would make available all of his speeches and so on, has refused, apparently, to open up the archives of such materials at the University of Nebraska in Omaha. Would that not be a showstopper in the Senate?
Well, unfortunately, you and I may have a different definition of showstopper as private citizens than we would if we were members of the elite club that is known as the U.S. Senate. And I think that what we're seeing right now is a lot of senators, I include people like John McCain and others, who made a big show of Hagel's lack of qualifications to be the Secretary of Defense and his complete incompatibility with a robust defense and a strong U.S. presence around the world now seems to be no longer a hot button. McCain himself has said, most of my questions have been answered. I see no reason to proceed. And the whole question about the archives at the University of Nebraska is troubling, but I don't think it's going to be a deal breaker. The argument du jour seems to be that the archive is not ready to present his papers because they haven't been properly organized. Well, I mean, you could stonewall that for a couple of decades if you wanted to, but unfortunately, unless and until there is a compelling new bit of information, either regarding his personal life or his political life, beyond what he said about Israel supporting apartheid and all the things we know, I think he's our next secretary, Frank. And the thing that bothers me the most is a guy like John McCain says he's clearly not qualified, but I'm going to vote for him. What does that tell you about the Republicans in the Senate? What's their job?
Yeah, well, I gather that what Senator McCain intends to do is to vote against him still, because of all of the reasons you've mentioned, and yet vote, in effect, for him by agreeing to cloture when the issue is put, shall we, you know, cut off debate and proceed to a final passage. And Senator Jim Inhofe, the ranking member of the Armed Services Committee these days, thank God he is the ranking member as opposed to John McCain, who used to be. He said that's the one and the same thing. Don't give me a break. I mean, how can you have it both ways? But Fred, just to drill down for a minute on this, because I get that, you know, some of these senators don't want to be obstreperous. Some of them say that they, oppose filibusters of presidential, you know, cabinet appointments. They don't want to be seen as dragging something out when questions about Benghazi Gate or something have been answered. And yet, it does seem to me that even the Democrats, the chairman of the committee, should be saying, wait a minute, you told us you'd make this stuff available. There's now a place where clearly this kind of evidence of more smoking guns must reside. And he won't make that that a sticking point. I really find this an appallingly low point in the Senate if they're going to let a guy lie to them as an oversight committee before he gets confirmed. They better expect they're going to get pretty bad treatment afterwards. Speaking of Benghazi Gate, Fred, moving right along, let me just ask you, we've been hearing a lot lately that suggests we haven't gotten to the bottom of this by any stretch of the imagination. Egypt apparently has a guy who has been implicated in the attacks, a former Libyan terrorist that we were arming, thanks to Chris Stevens at one point, who seems to have been implicated in it. They won't let us have access to him. What's up with that?
Well, this makes the second suspected terrorist in the Benghazi scandal that we've not had access to. This guy, Ali al-Harzi, who was held by Tunisia for a while and was denied access to the FBI. They eventually did get a chance to talk to him briefly, but they've now released him for lack of evidence, even though he's clearly linked to Benghazi. The person you're referring to is Mohammed Jamal, otherwise known as, well, his nom de guerre, I guess, is Abu Ahmed, but he is a known al-Qaeda operative, a terrorist, and I can't help noticing that at the same time we're talking about yet another guy who was perhaps not in Benghazi that night, but clearly calling the shots from some kind of command post involved in setting up that assault on the compound, is now being protected by a government that has been nothing but an adversary ever since we overthrew Hosni Mubarak. And the only other thing I would add about this situation, Frank, is it's now becoming very clear that the French troops that are trying to rid certainly northern Mali of their Islamist influence are now up against an insurgency that is better armed and equipped with more sophisticated weapons of destruction than they are. Where do you think they came from? They came from Libya. They came from Gaddafi's stockpile, courtesy of us and guys like Abu Ahmed.
Well, Fred Grandy, an old and very admired colleague of yours and my representative in the House of Representatives, as a matter of fact, Frank Wolf, has called for a select committee to be impaneled to look into this kind of folderol, and it certainly seems to me that's becoming more and more urgently needed all of the time, notwithstanding the testimony we've had so far, in fact, because of it in part, notwithstanding the so-called Accountability Review Board. I hope he will persist, and that some additional folks will be turning up shortly to give him a hand with that. Let me ask you finally, Fred Grandy, again as our guest, he's a senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy, former four-term member of the United States House of Representatives. Another nomination is still out there. I don't know if it's twisting in the wind or what, but no new schedule has been offered, as far as I know, to schedule the vote for the president's designated next director of the Central Intelligence Agency, John Brennan. There is a report out, the so-called definitive report on the Benghazi caper, that says John Brennan was involved in a very, very covert operation to arm the Syrian rebels. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's highly conceivable. Obviously, we've been following this link, just transshipment of arms that might have gone from Gaddafi to us, to Turkey, over to Syria. And most of this skullduggery is eventually found to have Brennan fingerprints on it, whether it's doctoring the report the night of Benghazi, or changing the talking points for Susan Rice, or involved in drone activities, which he supposedly supervised and then denied. And of course, he is told the committee that the United States should have nothing to do with people like Ali al-Harzi or Mohammed Jamal, because this is the sole discretion of these countries. Well, you know, this is a guy who hasn't been confirmed yet, essentially saying, I will prostrate myself in front of these openly hostile governments.
Just to say nothing of Islamists more generally, this is a guy who has embraced them at every turn.
Yeah, but that seems to have no impact on even the guys we would hope would say not only no, but hell no. And this would include people like Lindsey Graham and others who have supposedly sat in throughout these confirmation hearings, but are making no stink whatsoever about Brennan. And to me, the saddest takeaway from all of these confirmation hearings is how the Republicans are not exercising their constitutional obligation to provide investigation and oversight.
Yeah. This is really the constitutional crux of the matter, I think, Fred Grandy. And as usual, you've put your finger squarely upon it. We appreciate very much, as always, the chance to visit with you and the weekend wrap-up, and look forward to doing so again next week. Hopefully we will have some better news, some better performance on the part of these Republicans on sequestration, among many other things, by then. And in the meantime, Fred, I hope you stay well. Keep up the good work, needless to say. And next up, we will be talking with Yoram Edinger, an Israeli former ambassador, about, well, is it Munich 2.0? President Obama's trip to the Middle East coming up next month, straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.